The following podcast contains spoilers for Violence at Noon. You have been warned!
What's up, everybody, and welcome back to another episode of KFR News Radio. This is your host, Clinchman Button, along with your host. Have fun editing that one, Glenn. Miguel Magusto.
Hi, Glenn.
Hey. Hey, Mike.
How you doing?
I almost said hi, Glenn, too.
I'm facing you right now.
Oh, are you? Hey, buddy.
Yes.
What's going on?
How you doing?
Oh, man.
Oh, you know.
Oh, man.
Just talking over each other.
Oh, yeah. It's the only way we can talk.
Yeah, how you doing?
I'm all right. I'm not too bad. Got my eyes dilated. I'm all dilated as hell.
Nice. Like, you got them old man sunglasses?
No sunglasses. They didn't give me those. They just they flashbanged me four times. Then were like, get the hell out of my office.
Oh, my.
And I said, okay, gladly. Wow, I love it. It's like a toxic relationship, kind of like the movie we just saw today, but we'll get into that in a minute.
Yes, we will. Speaking of movies, what else have you watched? I'm pretty sure it's going to be a short list.
It's going to be a short list on what you think, but also a not short list on what I think. So since the last time we did do the podcast, we saw Dune Part 2.
Yes.
Well, there is a review up in Adam out in the YouTubes for that, but I'll just go on record and say that shit was pretty good. Damn right. Yeah. So you should probably watch that in theaters, people. I already had a discussion with one of my friends. They're like, yeah, I can't wait for that to be on streaming. I'm like, just go see it in theaters.
Your friend's a piece of shit and I hate him.
I was like, you're the reason why I won't have a job in the future. Thanks.
Yeah, piece of shit.
After that, Funimation, the app, is currently about to be deceased and it's going to go and cross over to Crunchyroll, but they're giving you a little window and saying, hey, you've got until...
I don't know what any of those things mean. Surely I'm not that old. What the fuck are you talking
about? You're not a weeb. So Funimation is an anime app.
That's true.
And Crunchyroll is also an anime app. They're converging into one app. So Funimation is being deceased. I know you know what that one means. It's getting cut from the interwebs. But all of its inventory is going over to Crunchyroll. So what I'm doing is I'm just trying to watch as much as I can on Funimation before it goes over to Crunchyroll because I don't want to pay for another app if I don't have to. So I'm trying to watch as much as I can on the app before it goes away. And a lot of those selections, I know I didn't watch a lot of movies, but I did watch a lot of anime. It's kind of killing me. The first one I watched was Gangsta. That was pretty good. It wasn't too bad. The ending was super rushed and very open-ended, and they never picked up another season. Next up, I finished Akudama Drive, which me and Chris Nudie were watching like during COVID, but never finished it. The animation's really cool. The story did not really captivate me in the slightest. Even ending still didn't captivate me in the slightest. But overall, the animation was super dope. And then I watched the second season of Jobless Reincarnation, which is very pervy, and that's what the one thing I hate about the show. But other than that, it's a pretty damn good show. I really liked the second season. A lot of people didn't because it was very, I guess, slow and more romantic than the other season. But the last one I watched was Speed Grapher, which was an interesting one. This guy got his powers. But his powers were every time he took a picture, he could basically, whatever was in that frame, could fucking explode. So that was interesting.
Oh, okay.
Basically, it was like wish was granted, or whatever your deepest desire was, your wish, that desire could be granted. Most people got like, you know, an insane flexibility and shit like that. This guy, because he was like a war photographer, he wanted to be able to like get a killer photo, that one killer photo, and that desire came true. He fucking he was exploding shit with it. It was a good show. I liked it. I can't wait to see what else I'm going to have to get into before April, but I'm going to have to watch a lot. A little bit of sad news is Akira Toriyama, the creator of Dragon Ball, died on March 1st. So there goes all of my childhood. I was a pretty upsetty spaghetti boy.
A lot of my friends were.
Yeah, that was like the big gateway into anime. Since I just started talking about anime the whole time, he was the big gateway into it. That whole Toonami series that was on Cartoon Network.
I never really watched any of his stuff because, as we know, I'm not a fan of anime. Mm-hmm. But you know, to make it more sad than it already is, he was my dad's age, so that's kind of
very
not looking forward to the future of that. So we'll see.
Very scary times.
Yeah.
But I mean, he died on March 1st, and it was pretty private that he did die for like another like week. Like, I don't think the world actually found out until
honestly, like, that's how 8th. It should be.
Yeah.
Let the family mourn before the fans get involved.
That's how rapper, I think MF Doom, I think he passed, and then like a week later, everybody else found out too.
Yeah.
But yeah, I know with the franchise, it was like a love-hate relationship because he just wanted to move on, but everybody was like, please, we need your opinion. He's like, but I know it's a huge impact to see him pass. His legacy will live on for probably a couple generations, to be honest. And then to cheer myself up, I watched Violence at Noon. But Mike, what did you get into, buddy?
I always say shit like that too. Like, I cheered myself up and watched Schindler's List.
Yep.
Because I do that all the time. Anytime I'm depressed, watching a movie just makes me feel better. It doesn't matter what kind of movie it is. I watched 13 movies. You know, as we stated, I'm not a weeb, as you said. Yeah. But my first movie was My Neighbor Totoro. The Studio Ghibli? What is it?
Ghibli, I think.
Ghibli. Studio Ghibli anime film. And I have to say, this was the first one that the only issue I had with it was the animation style, which, of course, is never going to change.
I was going to say, which is what they're primarily known for throughout all their movies.
Yes. I loved it otherwise. Mm-hmm. I thought the kid characters were charming. Totoro is a awesome character. The Cat Bus is kind of a fucked idea, though. What the fuck is going on? It's not cute. I mean, I guess it's not supposed to be cute, but it's just like, no, thank you.
I didn't watch that one, so that's on new ground.
But you've seen Cat Bus at least. Right? What the fuck?
I'm just saying, there's a movie, an anime movie that I didn't see that you did see. Now it's kind of crazy.
Yeah. What's the guy's name? Miyazaki.
Yeah. Hayao Miyazaki.
What the fuck? Oscar award winning.
Yeah.
Hayao Miyazaki. One for The Boy and the Heron.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, really liked My Neighbor Totoro. Cat Bus is fucked, but we'll move on. Dune Part 2, of course, as you said, we have a review for that on the YouTube. Been rereading the Zodiac book by Robert Graysmith.
You're cranking through it, too.
Yeah, and I first read it when I was 17. Never finished it totally. I was on like page 185 out of 300 or whatever it was.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm past that point now. Rewatched the David Fincher Zodiac film with Jake Gyllenhaal, Mark Ruffalo, John Carroll Lynch, and all those people. Love the movie. Fantastic film.
It is.
Funnily enough, the murders are only in the first 25 minutes,
which,
you know, looking back at the movie, I thought it was like spread throughout, but it's really just murder heavy in the first 25 minutes.
Mm-hmm. And then it's all investigative after that.
Yes, if you've read the book or read up on Zodiac at all, is very much how it was. The only murders that they know for sure he committed were within 1 year, but then the case kept going for, it's still not closed. Mm-hmm. So I thought that was very interesting. Then I watched Adam Sandler's newest movie, Spaceman. It's directed by the guy who did Chernobyl. Let me see if I can find his name. Johan Renck. And essentially, he's a man going on a space journey to Jupiter by himself to investigate something. And then he has like an alien, giant alien spider join him.
Oh.
Played by Paul Dano.
Nice.
And this movie's kind of getting torn apart. I understand everyone's gripes with it. I personally really liked it.
Because it's not Grown Ups 3?
No, I think people just can't take Adam Sandler seriously in this way. Like, both Punch Drunk Love and Uncut Gems, he was kind of playing like a loser character, where in this he's kind of a hero. So I feel like people are kind of thinking that's a stretch. I think it works. The only thing that doesn't work for me is Carey Mulligan plays his wife, and that's kind of an odd pairing, but, you know.
You telling me all the hottest women that he had as wives in all the other movies didn't count, but this
one? Other ones are at least around his age.
Yeah.
Yes, they're like out of his league, but they're around his age. She's like 10, 15 years younger than him. But I really liked it regardless. I think it's an interesting movie, but I understand everyone's gripes with it. I wouldn't say I loved it, but I did really, really enjoy it. Then I watched a few docuseries, The Truth About Jim, which is about this this woman who is kind of investigating her step-grandfather, who was possibly a serial killer, investigates if he was possibly with the Zodiac at one point. Spoiler alert for that part, he's not the Zodiac. That's a very short segment, so it's not really much of a spoiler. But this other serial killer that happened around the same time very well could have been that guy. Then I watched Aftershocks, the Everest and Nepal earthquake from 2015. It's just kind of following separate stories about the earthquake and talking to people. Really interesting documentary. Talks about, it kind of investigates, like, people who are in survival mode or either, like, fearful for their life or like willing to help people and stuff. Highly suggest people check that out if they're interested. I would never want to climb Everest, but I'm very interested in the mentally ill people that do.
Look at it from a distance real good.
You cannot persuade me into thinking that people that want to climb Everest are not mentally ill in some capacity. Functioning, yes, but goddamn, leave the mountain alone.
Adrenaline junkies scare me.
It's just not worth it. It is not worth it, in my opinion. It looks much cooler from the bottom, if you ask me. Then I watched Wolf Creek, the Australian slasher movie from 2005. First time watching that. Really cool movie. It felt like a smaller budget, which I always appreciate. Based on a true story, loosely based on a true story, where the serial killer in Australia was killing hitchhikers and stuff like that. Then I saw Kung Fu Panda Without You, Kung Fu Panda 4.
I'm sorry.
Accidentally went to see 4DX. 4DX is really starting to lose its charm. Much like when I tried to see Teacher's Lounge, I went to the Showtime not realizing it was 4DX, and it was the only Showtime around that. Even for other movies, that would have started, and because I have two kids now, I cannot.
Yeah, you got to be super selective now.
So I just went and watched it. Rewatched Pan's Labyrinth, Guillermo del Toro's masterpiece from 2006.
Still love that movie.
You got it, dude.
We were watching it together, and I just never got to finish it.
We're gonna watch it again. Don't worry. Then I watched The Most Dangerous Game, which is the movie going back to the Zodiac. It's the movie that police investigators believe inspired the Zodiac for, like,
the Zodiac his, kick.
Yeah, his. Well, I mean, for those of you who don't know me, the scariest thing I ever watched was a documentary about the Zodiac Killer. Watched it when I was 8 years old. Way too young to be watching something like that. So I've kind of been obsessed with it my whole life. Also, potentially the first Zodiac murder did happen in the town that I was born in, Riverside, California. That's not proven. It is widely speculated, but it is connected to my home, to the town I was born in.
So it might have been you.
Well, my uncle was questioned about the first murder. My uncle Bill, but he was only 14 at the time, so he wasn't a suspect, but he was questioned about it.
They never look at those ones.
They never do. But yeah, Most Dangerous Game, film from 1932. It's about as good as a 1932 horror movie is.
Mm-hmm.
I thought it was good. A little campy at parts, but, you know, that's what you're going to get. Saw the original 310 to Yuma from 1957. Only had seen the 2007 version, I want to say, with Christian Bale, Russell Crowe. Stays pretty loyal to the original after watching it, because, like, while I was watching it, I was like, this happens in that. So it's pretty good. I really enjoyed it. And then I watched Violence at Noon, which we're going to get into right now. We'll be right back.
two young women must come to terms with the fact that a man they're deeply linked to is a murdering rapist.
Oh, wow. Directed by Nagisa Oshima, written by Taijun Takeda and Tsutomu Tamura. Again, apologize Tamura for these pronunciations. Starring Seida Kawaguchi, Akiko Koyama, Kai Sato, and Roko Tora. This came up on Streaming Roulette, of course, and was the most interesting,
it was up against
movie,
Under the Skin.
Which I had already seen. Mm-hmm. Have you seen
same,
that one?
Same
yeah,
here
so
too.
We'd already seen it, so we wanted to watch something fresh. And also, the last time Streaming Roulette did a Japanese movie, which was the last time we did it, it was one of the best movies I've seen in a long time. So we were like, what the heck? Let's watch this movie about two women who realize they know a serial rapist.
Yeah, I had thought that this would be more of a better conversation piece than Under the Skin, because Under the Skin can be a little bit slow at times, and there's not too much. From the podcast last week when I was editing it, I made it sound like her being naked was the only thing to talk about. That's not
partially
true.
My fault for...
That's not true. That's not what I was trying to say. It was just the big thing that happened at the time. It was her first role. That would be one of the conversation pieces. I just want to preface that. I'm not a complete perv.
Under the Skin is way more complicated than just her being naked.
Yeah.
Like, it is a disturbing film. Mm-hmm. And has a lot about, at the same time, about humanity and all that. So, but we're not talking about that.
We're not.
What we're trying to say is we both are not virgins, and we have seen naked women, so we don't really care if a woman is naked or not.
Speak for yourself, pal.
Anyway, so we watched Violence at Noon. I will say that this really kind of cinematically felt like a French New Wave film.
Yeah.
Where it was kind of like focusing on style and close-ups and whatnot. Mm-hmm. I'm not a expert in French New Wave, but the French New Wave I have seen, the shot choices and how it goes about, you know, setting up scenes, it feels a lot like this film did. Mm-hmm. with close-ups of people just staring at each other with, like, you know, voiceover at times, and I thought it was actually better than French New Wave, because I if you know me, famously, do not care for French New Wave. But yeah, I thought this was just my biggest problem with French New Wave is that it's like often slowly paced, and they use the close-ups that aren't really meaning anything as a crutch. Whereas this, I felt like it enhanced it. Mm-hmm. You know, focusing on how both women are either confronting or ignoring the issue of this man that they know being a murdering rapist.
Sometimes both at the same time.
Both at the same time. They're either confronting it or ignoring it. And mm-hmm. there's purpose behind the close-ups, where in French New Wave, it's just like, let's take this 10-page script and... I don't know why I went Italian with it. Let's take these 10-page script and make it a 90-minute snooze fest. That's not to say all French New Wave are snooze fest. Just
but
the
that
ones
is
that,
how they sound, damn it.
Yeah, yeah. As we all know, I'm famous for my French accent. But yeah, I really liked this. I thought it was intense. It was interesting. Absolutely, and I'm proud to say this, hated the rapist character.
Oh, my God.
He was a piece of shit.
Yeah, the cinematography was like super solid. The shots were crisp. Everything was so detailed in everything. But I will say there's not many movies that make me uncomfortable. This one made me a little uncomfortable for a while.
Yeah.
For every time basically Isuke was just in the scene, I was like cringe.
Yeah.
I fucking hate this guy.
If that actor is not like that in real life, he did a phenomenal job.
He did so good. if that wasn't just him. Every time he was on the screen, I was just so grossed out, and just anything he did just felt skeevy in every single way, even when he wasn't doing any of that, criminal shit. Just when he was in the scene, he was just kind of like, off-putting in every single way.
Absolutely.
And definitely kudos to that actor. If, like, obviously he's more than likely not that.
Yeah.
Like 99% you can't be. There's no way. Unless it's based on a true story. And he was just like, hey, yeah, I'll play myself real quick. And then died at the end of the movie.
I mean, he's in Onibaba, which we watched on this podcast. So he's in other things. So I assume that he's not really like that. But it's one of those characters where he's just so good at it. You're like, he has to be like this in to some extent.
It's not even like the same comparison, but like with the fucking Joffrey kid from Game of Thrones.
Yeah.
People fucking hated that character so much that kid just quit acting. Obviously that kid's not like that. So everybody just bullied the shit out of him.
Yeah.
I mean, obviously nobody really bullied the shit out of Kai Sato, but damn it, I kind of wanted to for a little bit. I'm not going to lie about it.
We here at KFR, murder, we believe murder's bad. Rape, we believe rape is bad. Yep. No good. So, you know, we don't care for this character. And I'm, you know, that might be controversial, but hey, it's bad.
Yeah.
Stop doing those things.
It's not a picnic with that guy. Don't go on a picnic with that guy, especially by yourself.
Yeah, especially under your fiance that just committed suicide.
Yeah.
But a lot of the parts that made me uncomfortable too were, granted, again, I'm not Japanese at all. I don't know much about their culture, especially in the 60s, which is when this was released and I'm assuming takes place. But the way they react at first to the rapes and the murders was kind of off-putting.
Yeah.
And specifically the one scene with Matsuko, played by Akiko Koyama, where he's like starts like groping her and trying to rape her and everything. And then she's just like, just touch me. And it's disturbing how little self-respect the women at first in this film have, and then of course they build up to it having it. And
she
then,
just wanted to cuddle,
of course,
and he did.
Yeah, and of course we kind of know this with kamikaze pilots, but they're the way they react to suicide in general, you know, was uncomfortable as well.
Yeah.
So I don't know if that is the culture. Again, I'm not an expert in Japanese culture. I'm assuming it is because this is the only frame of reference I have, as well as, you know,
basic
knowledge of kamikaze pilots and samurais and all that.
I mean, like you said, not an expert, but when it was in war, dying in battle, like committing suicide was like the honorable thing.
Yeah, that's what I understood. But then like this not being war.
Yeah, obviously not.
And then
not,
still having that nonchalant attitude towards it.
Yeah, they kind of despised it. Like, you had no honor if you did these things. But, you know, it was kind of like, I think the suicide rate in Japan is so high that to them it's just like, he offed himself.
Yeah.
Yeah, let's just say he didn't and had a heart attack. Yeah, let's go with that. And then just casually laughing and stuff. Like, it's just kind of like a thing that just happens so often, it seems like, that it doesn't even really faze them. Especially dude just won like a councilman thing. He's like this head of the town, and everybody's like, yeah, okay, well that sucks. Let's get somebody else, I guess, huh?
Yeah.
Maybe we should do that.
Yeah. It's just, you know, it takes you off guard in today's, at least today's United States.
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely 60 years later, but still, like, even thinking of this, like just walking up to someone and be like, hey, I kind of want to kill myself. And then they just laugh in your face and say, get out of here, you're joking. Actually, you know what? Go ahead and do that. If that happened today, if, like, somebody came up to me and was like, you know, I'm thinking about killing myself, I'm like, huh?
In fact, that's illegal to encourage them to do it too. So,
first off, here's a pillow. We're getting in a pillow fight. I'm gonna knock you the fuck out before you.
And then I'm gonna hug you. I'm gonna hug you so hard.
God, I'm gonna cuddle you.
Yeah. So a lot of the things that were off-putting were just like the cultural differences, but at the same time, watching foreign movies from, you know, 50s and 60s really just kind of makes you realize how puritanical and like Puritan the United States was. Like there's obviously violence and rape in this, and I don't think for the most part it was shown as explicitly in the United States until the 70s. I could be wrong about that, but that's my understanding. I mean, the fact that Alfred Hitchcock had to fight to show a toilet flushing in 1960 in Psycho is ridiculous.
Yeah.
And then there's a Swedish film by Ingmar Bergman, Summer with Monica, 1953, that also has like brief nudity. And you're just, it's just like watching these old movies from other countries, just a reminder how ass backwards our country was and is regarding like,
yeah,
I know it's rape in this, French. But like just nudity in general.
Yeah,
because it's just like they're like, oh no, yeah, we could show someone getting hanged, but no boobs, no breasts.
It's definitely I think we were a little uptight too much.
Yeah, the problem, and this is still a problem today, where violence is much more, you know, accepted in film than nudity is.
Mm-hmm.
Which is just weird, especially when it's like non-bloody violence. Like I personally think non-bloody violence is worse for younger people to watch than bloody violence, just because you don't see the consequences of the violence.
It just shows that somebody's not gonna leak out of their chest when you stab them there.
You know those kids that go around knocking people out for fun? It's because they probably saw it in a movie and thought that they would just wake up.
Yeah,
but in reality, if you're knocked out for more than like half a second, something's fucked.
Yeah, something's not good there.
You need to go to the hospital. Like And even half a second, being knocked out for half a second is not good either. Yeah. So
any type of brain damage just ain't good. Yeah,
it's just interesting seeing these movies, you know, show things that are still kind of censored today in a way. Not as much as it used to be.
Yeah.
But like if they say they want a PG-13 rating, they're definitely going to censor this stuff.
Yeah, I mean, even like our movies in the 2000s, like they're like even the 2010s, maybe halfway through the 2010s, they started to go up further in like the, I guess you want to call it gory factor in some ways. And then we just started halting that again. Like it just started going, you know what, actually let's tone it back. Let's tone it back real hard. And then I don't know, it feels like we're kind of taking a step back on that too. Just very interesting. Just kind of like
I think that's because with movies like Hostel and stuff like that, it started becoming celebrated, the gore.
Yeah.
So I think that's why a lot of people kind of pump the brakes on that. But that's just the horror community in general. Like the horror community is very good at separating reality from movies, which is why they like the gore, because they admire the artistry of it more than anything. It's not like they think they're actually seeing what's happening and want to see more of it being real. They know it's corn syrup and red dye and gelatin and stuff like that to make all those things. I think, you know, with Hostel being as popular as it was, people kind of wanted to pump the brakes. Normally gory horror movies are not mainstream, so it's easier for them to pass by when that happens.
Yeah.
I thought this was a very interesting movie. For a while, I thought it was like kind of questioning, kind of like a Godzilla Minus One, questioning the culture of suicide in Japan. But then towards the end, I stopped thinking that because she tried to kill herself again.
Yeah.
So I'm not exactly sure what. Other than
what
you
the
know,
stance is, I don't think it's not, obviously it's not honorable. But I mean, I think just cause it happens so much, I think people are just, it's just like a nonchalant thing. They're like, oh shit, there goes another one. One thing I feel like, Saida Kawaguchi, I think she was phenomenal in this. She's the one who played Shino. She was amazing. And I think she was only in a couple movies too. I would have loved to see her in just as much as she could have done. Because she was so good in this. And I would love to see, I see she's got like a couple of other ones that maybe look kind of verified. I would love to check those out. Cause she was awesome throughout the whole thing.
The actress who played Akiko Koyama, they were both great. They both attacked the situation in completely different ways. Mm-hmm. Where, you know, Shino was trying to kind of run at it head first and solve the issue, but also kind of doing the honorable thing, I guess, by seeing if Asuka's wife is okay with her turning him into the police. Mm-hmm. Which, you know, which a is little like weird. That might be a cultural like, thing as well.
Yeah. Hey, if there's a guy running around murdering and, you know, raping, whichever order he wants to do it, fucking tell on that dude.
Yeah. That's not a good look for anyone involved.
Yeah. And so, in how many cases, I forget how many they said happened, but and he just kept going. It was like
30 or something.
It was up there. Yeah. Fucking save those women, man.
Yeah, for real. Like, it's not just you. And
now we understand Matsuko, this is fiction, but at the same time, it's not. There's people who protect people from doing crazy shit. Or no, not from doing crazy shit, just them doing crazy shit and then protecting them from the police and shit by not saying
anything.
It's
mostly like people and their kids. Hey, I understand loving your kids, but if they are hurting other people, stop them.
Mm-hmm.
Like, jail is probably the best thing for them if they're hurting other people, because if it gets far enough, it's just going to get worse, and then they'll no longer be safe.
Yeah.
And it's just crazy to me that people would protect other people. Like, these people are just like, oh yeah, if he asked me to bury a body, I would help him. Like, why? Why would you help someone bury a body?
I see that shit. You know, it's crazy. I just, not to fucking bring up TikTok, but there was like two women best friends that were talking to each other, and like the topic was, hey, would you tell my husband if I cheated on him? And then the one was like, fuck yeah, I would, which is a good person. And then there's like the comment section, it was like crazy. They're like, oh, if he's like, if she's asking me to bury a body, I'm there to help her. Or like, if she's cheating, or if she's like telling on my if she's telling on me to my husband, she's not my friend and shit like that. I'm like, the delusions are insane here. Holy hell.
If your friends will not call you on your negativity, your negative bullshit, mm-hmm. they are not good friends. Don't ask me how I know this, but the most recent example is the recent season of Love is Blind. I don't watch the show, but I got caught up in the, I forget her name, was Jennifer and Jimmy or something?
No idea. I know where Zach watches
it. She was like the clingiest, crazy lady, where like she's like, you didn't say I love you today. He's like, I did say I love you. So you didn't say it. I didn't believe it when you said it. It's like, well, that's your fault, bitch.
That's why it's so hard to date nowadays.
Yeah. But like, all of her friends, first off, say that she looks like Megan Fox. Not true at all. Second of all, would not tell her when she was being crazy.
Mm-hmm.
If your friends are being crazy, tell them they're being crazy.
Please.
Your job as a friend is not to back them up 100%. It's to be like, hey, you're being a little, give them tough love. You're being a little crazy right now.
Mm-hmm.
You should take a step back and reflect on this in order to grow by yourself and then grow with your partner as well. So the fact that people would just like not call their friends on their bullshit, such as fucking murdering other people
and raping
and cheating. Like,
yeah, it's crazy to me. Yeah. That was all, you know, I guess in a way she was technically, Matsuko was like their teacher, basically. Like, I think they said,
also red flag there. She told Aitsuko or Aitsuka, I don't know how to pronounce the name, Aisuke, that she was his teacher at mm-hmm. one point.
Yep.
Shouldn't be dating.
But here's another thing. When Shino left after the failed suicide and, you know, tutelage that happened afterwards, did only 1 year pass? I'm pretty sure I saw that. Yeah. I assumed like many years had passed since then, but 1 year is kind of nutty because she doesn't even. She's like, Aisuke, is that you in the beginning? I was like, wait, how did she not recognize him? It's only been like a year. That's crazy to me. maybe if it was dark or something, like, and she didn't recognize him. Now, it was in black and white, so it could have been, but it looked like it was plain as day.
Yeah. It's also, I mean, if it was a independent film or a low budget film, the writing could have just been lackluster. But again, going back, if someone has raped and murdered or tried to murder 30 people in a year,
mm-hmm.
stop them. Going back to the Zodiac, he only had, was it 7 confirmed murders, 5 to 7 confirmed murders in 1 year.
Mm-hmm.
And he's considered one of the deadliest serial killers. If it's 30 in a year, do something.
Especially if he had already done something to you, and now he just came back, tied you up again.
Mm-hmm.
Fucking get it together.
Mm-hmm. He says that you were dead. When you're dead, you're not a person.
Yeah, you're just a thing.
Necrophilia is a crime, too. Well, granted, in the United States, it's a crime. I don't know the necrophilia laws of Japan.
I can only imagine that it's...
I mean, it's...
He was just justifying what he did to make himself look good. Yeah, but, I mean, I know you know, but it's just like he kept justifying himself. Yeah.
And I'm not wrong.
Fuck that or whatever. Yeah.
To be clear, I understand that many women are sexually assaulted and then don't come forward, and I sympathize with that. I know it's scary.
Mm-hmm.
But what we're talking about is that Shino was going to, but she wanted permission from Iska's wife.
Mm-hmm.
That's what we're talking about, not the, you know, the
Iske. Wondering, I don't remember if it's Iske or Iske.
Whatever. Wondering why they're not coming forward. Yeah. Like, we understand it's more complicated than that. But in this movie, mm-hmm. it's not that complicated.
Yeah, she even goes on to say, like, oh, like, if he would have just said his feelings, I would have married him even after that whole thing. Like,
girl, also problematic. Girl, what? Also problematic. Yeah. Hey, ladies, have some self-respect. You know,
it's the 60s, I know you like, but come on.
I like man. I know you love people in mansplaining to you that you should have self-respect, but you should.
This movie, all it did was confirm just toxic masculinity is attractive. I don't know. That's what it did to me. Not in a good way. At all.
Either that or, like, the culture in Japan is just so, in the 60s, is so messed up that they should do something to fix it if they haven't already. I'm going to choose to assume that they have fixed it if this was even a realistic representation of Japanese culture.
I mean, again, I'm pretty sure it was also written by men, so that...
Well, yeah, I mean...
That doesn't help either.
Yeah,
women's perspective.
Famously great at writing women as they run down the stairs boobily.
Yeah, I do love boobily. Running the emotion is just so good.
Yeah. But, you know, other than our problems with the logic, well, my problems with the logic, and I really think this is a good movie. Iska's a chilling character, and he was fantastic.
Mm-hmm.
Both leading women are great. It's a well-made film. That just, you know, from a 2024 United States of America citizen frame is just kind of questionable.
Yeah.
Excuse me. But I did really enjoy it. The cinematography is probably my favorite part, especially towards the end. The cinematography from when they're in Osaka, is that the city they're in?
I think so.
From when they're in Osaka to the end.
He was in Tokyo when he got caught, and I think they were in Osaka delivering off those kids to the big city.
Yeah, and then they took a train to Tokyo. But like from that point on to the end was just beautiful cinematography. Yep. I love the off-kilter shots they did, like the one I had Glenn recreate for me in the beginning.
Yeah.
Just fantastic cinematography. I loved it. And it's just a chilling movie that is intriguing in its differences in culture and just the story it tells so well, in my opinion, despite it being infuriating that she's just not going to the police. Not only is she not going to the police, she's working with the police.
Yep.
And purposely not pointing him out. Yep. Okay, yeah, you go, Glenn.
Yeah, I mean, like you were saying, my favorite thing was the cinematography as well. I liked the fact that it made me uncomfortable. It makes me feel like I'm a human being. But God, did it make, there's not many movies that make me feel uncomfortable in such ways. Like there's like, not to make me sound like a bad person, like there's modern day scenes where like they're presenting like a rape on screen. And like, I feel like they do it a little more tastefully. And this just was like more force than just like going for it. And just like, I felt like I was actually watching it. It was like, oh God, this is disgusting to me. Ugh.
If you ask me, tasteful rape scenes are immoral and dangerous because it's like tasteless violence. Scenes. Yeah. Like you're glorifying the act if you're making it tasteless.
Mm-hmm.
So rape, murder, violence, it should all be uncomfortable to watch. With the exception, you know, going to violence with like Kill Bill and stuff, where it's like just so over the top that it kind of becomes funny. For violence, rape should never be done in a funny way.
Yeah.
But if it's done tastefully, like a lot of American films do, it's just like you're doing it wrong. And I know it's difficult to watch, but that's the point. That's the point.
That is the point. Yeah. But I mean, other than that, I did enjoy the movie for the most part. It was really good. Like I said, Saida Kawaguchi, she was phenomenal in this. Like she was my favorite part of the whole thing. Maybe her intentions and decisions I hated, but I think her as an actress, she was great.
Just
overall, another good pick from the roulette.
Yeah, yeah. They're killing it with this 1960s Japanese.
They are.
But yeah, I don't have anything else to say. Should we get into the judgment?
I think we should.
So that does it for our review for Violence at Noon. That brings us to the judgment. As always, it needs to be a unanimous decision whether or not it goes on the KFR shelf with the likes of Apostle and Handmaiden. Call it in the air, Glenn. Heads or tails?
Tails.
And tails, you get to go first.
Motherfucker.
Does it go on the shelf
really
with the likes
of
Apostle and
Handmaiden?
I really
wanted your opinion before I did it.
I can go first if that's what.
I don't know. This is definitely a movie that I felt like I had to sit on. Even like after I did finish it, like I sat for a good like 5 minutes just not doing anything before you were like, "Hey, you ready to go?" Mm-hmm. So I don't know. I think I probably would said I'd want to put it on the shelf. Just for probably how uncomfortable it made me. And God damn it, if I'm going to be uncomfortable, so are you guys. So are you guys. It made me feel uncomfortable in a good way where it made me feel like a human being and just disgusted with humanity and what is the worst to come with humanity. But girls, please, for the love of God, fess up to crimes and shit. It'll be easier on everybody, I promise. Hopefully.
Especially if you're the victim.
Oh my God.
I know
we're
it's
here
difficult,
for you,
but like.
I promise.
Yeah.
Mike.
Hopefully everyone else is too, if they're not the pieces of shit.
Yeah.
I watched it 2 days ago, so because I had to edit a little trailer for us, because I couldn't find one. So I have had time to sit on it. And if you asked me right when it ended, I would have been in the same boat as you did. But after thinking about it for 2 days, I think the cinematography in it and the way it's shot and the story it ultimately tells, you know, regardless of the questionable details.
Yeah.
I think it's a solid film overall. And I think it is definitely worthy of the shelf. So I would also say yes.
Look at that.
So Violence at Noon does go onto the KFR shelf with the likes of Apostle and Handmaiden. That brings us to next week's film. It is my turn to pick, which means it is Glenn's turn to pick a number between 1 and 52.
I'm feeling a nice little 14 today.
14. That is going to be The Prestige.
Oh, shit, yeah.
From Oscar award-winning director Christopher Nolan.
This is one that I really wanted to watch again recently. So this is awesome.
I'm also proud of myself for not having to work really hard to do the math anymore. So this is going to be on Apple TV Plus. It's also available to rent Amazon.
Mm-hmm.
If you don't have Apple TV Plus, you could probably do a free trial for 7 days and watch it.
We believe in you.
Or just rent it because, it's money.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, great. I just exited out of the thing I needed.
Wouldn't it?
I'm doing math.
Wouldn't it be sick if this popped up at the Colonial at the perfect time for us to see it again.
Oh.
Not again, but we saw the fountain. It'd be perfect if this popped up.
I don't think it will, but it would be perfect.
Every great magic trick consists of three acts. The first act is called the pledge. The magician shows you something ordinary, but of course, it probably isn't. The second act is called the turn.
He's obsessed with discovering your method.
The magician makes this ordinary something do something extraordinary.
Huh.
Now you're looking for the secret, but you won't find it. That's why there's a third act called the prestige. This is the part with the twists and turns, where lives hang in the balance.
Julie, come on!
And you see something shocking you've never seen before. This was built by a man who can actually do what magicians pretend to do.
Real magic.
I know what you really are!
How does he do it?
You want the truth.
Nothing is impossible.
Abracadabra.
No more secrets.
Secrets of my life.
So The Prestige, 2006. After a tragic accident, two stage magicians in 1890s London engage in a battle to create the ultimate illusion while sacrificing everything they have to outwit each other.
Ooh, Glenn, is that
directed
you?
Directed by Christopher Nolan, written by Jonathan Nolan, Christopher Nolan, and Christopher Priest. Starring Christian Bale, Hugh Jackman, Scarlett Johansson, Michael Caine, Rebecca Hall, Piper Perabo, and David Bowie, Andy Serkis, many others. This, again, is going to be on Apple TV+, 8.5 out of 10, 66 Metacritic score, The Prestige. Fun fact, I went on the very first date that I ever went on to go see this movie.
Ooh, scandalous
and,
man.
And all I will say is me and my date had differing opinions of this movie, and I couldn't continue pursuing this person after said date. So,
yeah, shoo him to the side. Make way for Hugh Jackman, baby.
I didn't think I was that kind of person, but I guess I am. So I'll talk more about that next week.
Yes, yes, yes.
Yes. So The Prestige on Apple TV Plus or renting on Amazon or wherever. Or if you're like me and have a physical copy of it, that's even better. You can check those out, and then we'll talk about it next week. Thank you, everyone, for listening and watching. As always, you can check out our website at www.keystonefilmreview.com. On Instagram, we're Keystone_film_review. Facebook, TikTok, Facebook, TikTok, YouTube, Keystone Film Review, and on Letterboxd, I'm Mike KFR.
And I'm Glenn KFR.
And that will do it until next week, when I am not going to try to do a Michael Caine impression, because I respect him too much, and I know it's going to be horrible.
I'm going to work on it the next 2 weeks to try.
Do it. Yeah, someone's got to do it. I love Michael Caine impressions are my favorite kind of impressions.
Master Wayne. Stop doing the magic tricks, Master Wayne.
Goodbye, everybody.
Bye-bye.